I'm a recovered alcoholic. So honored to be here. My sobriety date is April 3rd, 1987. And whoever would have thought I would be doing this? I want to just say, in case you don't know, that I am an alcoholic who cannot control my drinking once I start, and I can't stop once I start. And when I'm drinking, I'm a mess. And I came in here into AA because I thought I should sober up and joined the not drinking society of AA. And that's what, you know, the don't drink and go to meetings, AA. And didn't really have any sense of a spirituality. I thought I was an agnostic, quite honestly. I know there were other people in the meetings that I went to that also were called themselves agnostic. It seemed like a thing to be. And so, you know, essentially, I want to say I was, you know, for 17 years, I was just not drinking, going to meetings. I was a very active member of AA, doing everything that I was told to do. Don't drink, go to meetings, sponsor, chair meetings, etc. And, you know, came up at around 17 years with just thinking, just not happy in my sobriety, and not wanting to, I didn't know if I was going to want to even go on. I really have to admit that I can't say that drinking really was a good option for me. I was looking to check out all the way, you know. I mean, I was just like ready to be done. But thankfully, I learned enough. I learned how to ask for help. I did. And I just want to recap some of the things that I talked about, and that you've been patiently listening to, how in step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives were unmanageable. I had absolutely no power over alcohol once I drank it, or once the thought entered my mind. You know, I couldn't erase that. And then, of course, coming to believe in a power that could restore me to sanity. For me, you know, the idea is with this program is to help us find a channel to God. This is a spiritually based program. So we don't have power. We come in on step two looking for power. Number three, step three, we make a decision, determine will and life. Who does have the power? My will is everything I think, and my life is everything else. All that goes to God. The book says we suffer. Selfishness. And the case for me, and we ask God to remove our selfishness from the third step. And step four was the inventory, looking at the exact nature of our wrongs, not just what others did, but what was my part. And in step three, about what we learned about ourselves in step four, and is the first initial real experience. I mean, there, you have to be humble, you know, humiliated slash humble, obviously, I think, to come into AA. And then the thousand surrenders follow in the remaining steps, you know, humbling yourself with another person. I did bring my big book, and I was just going to read a little thing real quick here, page 75. Oh, it's very warm in here tonight. Of course, after step five, the instruction is the book, and the book says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. And, you know, the recommendations, take the book down, look at the initial first five proposals or steps. And for me, after I did my second fifth step with Yolanda in San Antonio, I gave out the handout last week of the obstacles. And once some of those obstacles were cleared away, and even the telling of my story to Yolanda, I can tell you that, you know, the sunlight of the spirit started to shine in, and I could feel more the presence of a higher power of God coming in and thanking God that we know him better. And I would say for me that I was just getting a glimpse at the end of that step five. And so we're trying in this step to say, you know, looking at the exact nature of our wrongs, you know, the fears, the self-centered fears, anger and resentments, the judgments, the criticism, dishonesty, with myself, rationalizing, you know, telling myself rational lies about what I'm doing and what's going on in my life. Those are the things. Am I ready? Am I ready? Becoming willing to have those things be removed from me. The 12 and 12 says that this step is the step that separates the men from the women. It's a lifelong process, and that anybody with enough willingness would keep trying to see the thing of it is, of course, I don't know, it's not a one and done thing with the sixth step, you know, because at least for me, you know, the character defects, I think the longer I've been sober, the more clearing they've become. For me, I'm a sick alcoholic. I'm the hopeless variety. And more and more has been revealed to me. So with this step, the way it is for me today is that with my character defects, and it's kind of the prayer that is used in step four, but, you know, I just ask God on my knees sometimes, sometimes not. I'll say, oh, I don't want to act this way anymore, God. I don't want to be angry. I don't, you know, whatever it is, judgmental, critical, you know, please take this away. Direct my attention to what you would have me be. That's my prayer that I use currently for my character defects, because they come up. They come up. And for me now, I don't like them. I thought before it was, you know, kind of a sport to be sarcastic and, you know, make fun of people a little bit and, you know, things like that. And, you know, it's not. You know, some of the things that I thought were funny, nobody else thought was funny. they were hurtful. And I was really incapable of considering another person's feelings because I was a slave to my own. And in the sixth step, it's an opportunity for me, you know, here's what it is. Here's what I was kind of dancing around for a second. That feeling in the gut. I don't know if any of you have ever had that gut feeling. When you're about to embark on a situation, whether it's a relationship or whatever it is, an idea, and you get that, in the gut, you know. I can't tell you how many times I plowed right through that feeling. Did not was that is to me my higher power, God, telling me, whoa, stand back. And those were the signs that I just blew through it. Why? Because of my self-will run riot. That is it. And, you know, I thought that was the thing I initially was very proud of. And, of course, pride, false pride, especially in being self-sufficient, is one of my biggest character defects. And it is actually, someone brought this to my attention, a priest or minister, somebody said that pride is at the root of all of the other character defects. And for me, I think that sounds right. So this I brought my book, The Language of the Heart. I don't know, this is my favorite book. I got it quite a few years ago when the Grapevine republished an essay written by Bill Wilson. He wrote this in January in 1858. Bill Wilson troublesome depressions, and it's called The Next Frontier. Emotional. Are you guys cool with me? But I don't know what else, because to me, the character defects, the sins, the emotions, whatever it is, you know, it gets replaced with something else. And for me, what I am striving to achieve is emotional sobriety, not just physical. Physical sobriety, you know, I've had for a long time. The emotional sobriety thing in the head is what's been an ongoing issue for the life of me. I think that many oldsters who have put our AA booster to severe but successful tests don't find they often lack emotional sobriety. Perhaps they will be the spearhead for the next major development in AA, the development of much more real maturity and balance, which is to say humility in our relations with ourselves, our fellows, and with them.
Yeah, here.
What?
I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Thank
How about
you.
Now?
Yeah.
Can we hear now? Okay. Those adolescent urges that so many of us have for self-approval, perfect security, and perfect romance, urges quite appropriate to age 17, prove to be an impossible way of life when we are at age 47 or 57. How true that is. Since AA began, I've taken immense wallops in all these areas because of my failure to grow up emotionally and spiritually. My God, how painful it is to keep demanding the impossible, and how very painful to discover finally that all along we've had the cart before the horse. Then comes the final agony of seeing how awfully wrong we have been, but still finding ourselves unable to get off the emotional merry-go-round. How to translate a right mental conviction into a right emotional result, and so into easy, happy, and good living? Well, that's not only the neurotic's problem, it's the problem of life itself for all of us who have got to the point of real willingness to do the right principles in all our affairs.
Debbie, we can't hear you. We'd love to hear you. You have to move over in front of the mic, if you would, please. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. The place, and it's a hell of a spot, literally. How shall our unconscious, from which so many of our fears, compulsions, and phony aspirations still stream, be brought into line with what we actually believe, know, and want? How to convince our dumb, raging, and hidden Mr. Hyde becomes our main task. I recently come to believe that this can be achieved. I believe so because I begin to see many benighted ones, folks like you and me, commencing to get results. Last autumn, depression, having no real rational cause at all, almost took me to the cleaners. I began to be scared I was in for another long chronic spell. Considering the grief I've had with depressions, it wasn't a bright prospect. I kept asking myself, why can't the 12 steps work to release depression? By the hour, I stared at the St. Francis prayer. It's better to comfort than to be comforted. Here was the formula, all right, but why didn't it work? Suddenly, I realized what the matter was. My basic flaw had always been dependence, almost absolute dependence on people or circumstances to supply me with prestige, security, and the like. Failing to get these things according to my perfectionistic great specifications, I fought for them, and so did my depression. There wasn't a chance of making the outgoing love of St. Francis a workable and joyous way of life until these fatal and almost absolute dependencies were cut away. Because I had over the years undergone a little spiritual development, the absolute quality of these frightful dependencies had never before been so starkly revealed. Reinforced by what grace I could secure in prayer, I found I had to exert every ounce of will and action to cut off these faulty emotional dependencies upon people, upon AA, indeed upon any set of circumstances whatsoever. That was the only way to be free to love as Francis had. Emotional and instinctual satisfactions were really the extra dividends of having love, offering love, and expressing love appropriate to each relation of life. So he went on to say, plainly, I could not avail myself of God's love until I was able to offer it back to him by loving others as he would have me. Which would be impossible to do so long as I was victimized by false dependency. For my dependency meant demand, a demand for the possession and control of the people and conditions surrounding me. While those words, absolute dependency, may look like a gimmick, they were the ones that helped to trigger my release into my present degree of stability and quietness of mind. Qualities which I am now trying to consolidate by offering love to others regardless of their intimate. This seems to be the primary healing circuit, an outgoing love of God's creation and his people by means of which we avail ourselves of his love for us. It is most clear that the real current flow until our paralyzing dependencies are broken and broken. Only those who have lately.
You're fading out again, Debbie.
Deb, you're
we can't hear you. Please stay in front of the mic. I hate to ask you to do that, but it would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. So the thing of it is, Bill Wilson wrote, in the first 6 months of my own sobriety, I worked hard with many alcoholics. Not a one responded. Yet this work kept me sober. It wasn't a question of those alcoholics giving me anything. My stability came out of trying to give, not out of demanding I receive. Thus, I think it can work with emotional sobriety if we examine every disturbance we have, great or small. We will find at the root of it some unhealthy dependency and a consequent unhealthy demand. Let us, with God's help, continually surrender these troubles.
Debbie, we're losing you again.
Whenever you move to the left, we cannot hear you on Zoom.
She's actually moving to the right. But
whenever.
Just stay in front of the microphone if you could,
okay,
Debbie. It really would be helpful. Thank you.
All right. Maybe. Okay, well, that's it. So emotional sobriety is, to me, the removing of the character defects is the beginning of looking at the unhealthy dependencies I have in my life and how they manifest themselves, very negative way. And it kept me in a constant state of turmoil and sobriety because why I was not mature. And emotionally, I definitely was not. I was a slave to my emotions. And I can tell you that, you know, I made all the decisions, major decisions in my life based on how I felt. And that was, I now know that it's not how decisions are made. But anyway, step six is the beginning to me of the spiritual seeking, of constantly going within, finding these little dependencies, defects, whatever it is, and saying, oh, now the feeling I get in my stomach is I don't want to live like this anymore. And being ready to have the move. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. Well, who would like to start us off with questions from here in the room or on Zoom? Here on Zoom, just unmute yourself and go ahead and ask your question.
These are all well people.
Good evening, Debbie. I'm Dave Zern, alcoholic.
Hi.
Thanks so much, and I apologize for interrupting, but sometimes when you moved over away from the microphone, we couldn't hear you here on the the computer. So thank you. But I'm fascinated by your coming about to say, rather than removing those things or asking God to remove our defects of character, that you went to removing our not so good dependencies. And I just love that aspect. And could you perhaps go a little bit deeper into that aspect of step six? I thought it was fascinating and I appreciate it so much.
Okay.
Is that a question? I think it's a question.
Oh, of course, a question.
Okay.
For me, I guess what it is, you know, as Bill Wilson put it so well. It was, you know, for me, my demand for, you know, approval from everybody, you know, from the job, from the boyfriend, from the whatever, to the security aspect, to the everything. It was my demand, really perfectionistic thinking. And because of that, you know, unrealistic pressure, really, on myself and others. And the result was that I had a lot of emotions around that, and I made a lot of bad decisions. And I can see that at the basis of all of it, all of the, you know, defects of character, there's a linked unhealthy dependency, like I said, with especially approval seeking and perfectionism, fears and false pride, all of them related. So I hope that answered your question.
Thank you. Thank you for all you've been doing for us. I appreciate it, Debbie. Thank you.
Hi. Hi, Jeff.
Okay, thanks, Deborah. I appreciate it. It's really different here on Zoom, so thank you again for sharing. I guess my question on Jack's there. Can you
Kevin? Hear me? I'm sorry. There was a question here.
Okay.
I don't know whether you're not. Yeah, I don't know whether you're not hearing.
I didn't hear. We didn't hear.
At least I have a microphone.
Okay, so let them ask the question there then.
Okay,
go ahead, Jeff.
Are you having microphone issues there?
Oh.
We're not hearing you at all.
You can't hear?
We haven't heard a thing, no.
Okay, well, hold on and we'll repeat the question.
Okay. Go on, Jeff.
That in our character defects. That was super helpful for me. And I guess my question to you is, did you find it kind of tricky to draw the line between, you know, the legitimate pursuit of happiness and, you know, legitimate expectations of, you know, life being correct in some ways, versus like these demanding, selfish, unrealistic insistence on having it all your way. That borderline to me is something that kind of comes up in a lot of, you know, contexts, like expectations. And I just wondered what you had to say about that.
Did you guys hear that at all?
Hear that?
Yes. Yes, we did.
So, I don't know. It's funny how this program works, because I don't see things as a fine line anymore. There's no real line. For me, by letting go of outcomes, you know, with the dependencies and my expectations and, you know, letting go of that, I don't have to worry about what the outcome is going to be. I can just let it be. And it's taken me a long, long time to get to that point. But, you know, it's like in this AA program, there are, a million surrenders over and over again to myself, to the universe, to whatever. And so it's not as black and white as it used to be that way. Just whenever I have a dependency or a thing that comes up and I'm overwhelmed by it, I hit my knees and do the third step prayer. And, you know, all of these things that I didn't necessarily think were helpful, you know, have proven to give me a sense of peace I never thought I would have otherwise. That's it.
Welcome.
We got a live one. Hi, Patrick.
Said that the first time you did the steps, or when you first got sober down in Pittsburgh, I think, there wasn't, or
we're not hearing the question again.
Yeah. I'll make it simple. Simple question. So back then, when the first time you did the steps without, I think, what you've characterized as a proper foundation of what a higher power might be, how did you reconcile that? Like, what or who were you prepared to have addressed your character to?
You know what, honestly, first time around, it was, you know, my first time was more of step five, was more of a confession, and I was looking for forgiveness. And, you know, I didn't really like the whole term character defects, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, during that time that I didn't have God, it wasn't like I wasn't doing anything. I was going to therapy for all my emotional problems. For many years, I went to therapy. And I did, it was helpful in a lot of ways, especially having grown up in an alcoholic home. However, it did not take care of the spiritual malady, which is what makes me an alcoholic when I drink, especially. I'm an alcoholic when I think. That's what the big problem is. Hi. Oh, no.
Thank you.
questions.
So is there any questions from the live people?
Correspond or correlate or whatever with dependencies. And, you know, the whole this whole thing about being selfish, you know, I, like most alcoholics, I think I didn't think I was. What do you mean selfish? I bought presents for people, whatever, you know. But now I can see how a lot, you know, how it really was all about me. What about me? And the dependency for me to have top approval and all of it, it's hard to wrap my mind around it. It was hard, but I mean, it is all selfish, self-centered, and it's fear. Fear of not getting what I want, fear of losing what I have. And not wanting other people to know. False pride and all that. And so that's what selfishness looks like for me today. And I have a better understanding, and I know at my core I am that way. So I always have to ask God to help me with that and remove it. And, you know, fill it with its opposite, which is love. Right? Thank you. That's all. Okay. Kevin, are you ready with your question?
I think I'm fine. It's just difficult hearing the question when they ask you live. I don't know why that is. It just is.
Okay.
It's interesting from this side.
Okay.
In past meetings, has it been as difficult to hear the questions from the participants?